Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
There are three live games. There's Tim Vickery, goodness, and Kevin Kilbane, not to send us in a tricky enough path here. But David Ryan on Twitter, in light of our last conversation, which the radio listeners would have heard and the podcast listeners won't have heard, but Dennis Taylor was on. He was saying that Ronnie O'Sullivan is the only snooker player he would apply the word genius to. The only genius who has ever picked up a snooker cue, and Dennis Taylor has seen them all. And he doesn't care that Hendry has seven and Davis has six world titles and O'Sullivan has five. He said it's irrelevant. O'Sullivan is just the greatest and everybody in the game thinks so. So David Ryan on Twitter says, I think Ronnie is the most naturally gifted sportsman I've witnessed. And so I say to you, Kevin, Lionel Messi versus Ronnie O'Sullivan. There's a fun discussion.
Yeah, it is. Well, you could put then AP McCoy. You could put, you could put...
McCoy was a workhorse. I'm scratching him off straight away.
Ah, what? No, no.
Yeah, determination.
Ruby then.
Okay, we're talking Lionel Messi here and Ronnie. Well,
Maradona. I don't know. Yeah. We can put anyone. We're going to have a.
You're putting Messi ahead of Ronnie O'Sullivan, though, aren't you? Is Lionel Messi the most gifted sportsman person you've ever seen?
Certainly the most naturally gifted footballer, I would say. Yeah, okay. I still in
so therefore,
part of me still thinks Diego person. Maradona, because he's the one that I first saw in that World Cup in Mexico '86, and I just thought, wow, this is just unbelievable. Uh-huh. So it still made me think Maradona, but I couldn't argue with that assessment you're saying there, but it's a different game. It's obviously it's obviously a lot slower, but it's how he maybe computes his mind, and that's what maybe I don't know. It's such a difficult one. It is one.
Who computes his mind? O'Sullivan?
O'Sullivan, yeah. Right. And he's doing it, obviously. Messi's doing it differently, different speeds. He's doing it, I don't know, with a little bit of guile. I could make arguments for both. I could in different ones. It's amazing when you think of Ronnie O'Sullivan, what he's done and how he can play left and right handed. I wouldn't necessarily see...
Messi can play left and right footed, Kev.
No, he can't. George Best could, according to, John Giles says that anyway, but...
Giles' Best was the only player he felt could turn as quickly off either foot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is an interesting point. Mm. No, I suppose Messi isn't really two-footed. Not really.
No. No. Not at
all.
I mean,
he is, but he's not. He's not. No. Not really.
Not at all. No. Not at all.
He can swing his right foot at it.
Yeah, we can all swing our right foot.
How good has Messi been that he hasn't needed to be two-footed over a 13-year career?
It puts Dave McIntyre's theory about players that every single professional footballer should be two-footed, just puts that to bed when you just see Lionel Messi, the greatest of all time.
I'd have Messi ahead of O'Sullivan.
Right, well, take that. Personally, yeah, I'd probably be with you, yes, because...
Right. So we're not quite agreeing with David Ryan there.
Yeah, but it's a great point, though. It's a great talking point.
A great point. So, where do you want to start? We've got Champions League draw, which we didn't touch on last night, and we will talk to Tim Vickery. It's 10 years since Kaká won the Ballon d'Or, so Tim Vickery's going
to
tell us where it all went wrong for Kaká, his place in Brazilian football. There was a time for maybe 2-3 years where he was the best player in the world. So we'll talk to Tim Vickery later on. There's Champions League draw, as I said, and then Christian Benteke has apologised to his Crystal Palace teammates for the penalty situation against Bournemouth. It was 2-2. And Luka Milivojević had...
Milivojević. Yeah.
The Crystal Palace number 4 had scored penalty.
Yeah.
He didn't put up much of a fight at 2-2 when Benteke took the ball off him, yeah. I felt. I was saying, Luka, you've just bowed out of that one too.
I always remember the one when Leighton Baines and Kevin Morales had the same situation. And Leighton Baines, everyone said, he didn't put up a fight. It just looks so bad on the pitch. I think Leighton Baines used his maturity and used it at that time and said, look, I see the bigger picture here. I'm going to have to, because it just looks so bad what's happening actually on the pitch.
With Morales.
Yeah, and I think that was in Milivojevic's mind. It must have been, Joe, because it looks so bad when two players arguing. We saw it with Neymar and Cavani, didn't we, early on? We spoke about that this season when they were arguing. It looks bad. It comes across bad. It's like spoilt kids on a football pitch.
Even if you're the actual designated penalty taker, does it really reflect badly on you? Or do most people say, well... He's perfectly entitled to stick up for his case. Are you not a bit spineless, actually?
No,
Are there not certain moments in life where you have to stick up for yourself?
Of course you've got to stick up for yourself. But Joe, but again, Leighton Baines was the same. I think you're seeing a bigger picture. You're becoming that team player. everything that Christian Benteke isn't. He is not the team player because he wanted the glory. He was pure. It was a pure act of selfishness.
Where does team player become doormat, though? Because even I remember Monday Night Football where Gary Neville was saying, do you know what? And he's a nice lad and I know him from England, Judy. Leighton Baines is a bit too nice. And he should have stamped his authority
situation. But I tell you what now, how bad did that look when Neymar and Cavani were going at it? It looked bad.
But it reflected, do you feel like Cavani came out of that badly as well?
No, I didn't.
Then you're agreeing with me. So the designated penalty taker is within his rights to say, hang on, get lost.
No, yeah, I understand what it's, but I think sometimes you've just got to think, look, but now we've been talking about this feud now for the last 3 or 4 months. We'll be talking about that feud between Morales and Baines now.
I haven't mentioned the Neymar Cavani penalty feud once.
Sorry?
Either of you?
Yeah, we have. We've mentioned it. Look, not the feud itself, but we've mentioned the feud that's growing.
The ongoing feud. Yeah. But not the penalty situation.
No, but that's come about from that, though. And we would have been talking about Milivojevic and Benteke further down the line as well. Or certainly, maybe not us to the extent, but certainly within Palace circles, that would have been spoken about.
What about if Luka and a few of the other Crystal Palace players had all ganged up on Benteke? Shouldn't the whole team come over to him and say, you... grow up.
That's just ridiculous. I'm with you totally. If I was captain of the side, I'd like to think I'd be in a position to go, look, I tell you what, he's on the pens, he takes them. That's what I'm sure Roy Hodgson would have said if he could have got anywhere within earshot of the players. I'm sure he would have said that himself. But Christian Benteke picks up the ball and then whatever happens then, Benteke misses the penalty, yes, cost Palace, which could cost them at the end of the season, we'll see. If Milivojevic misses penalty, then Benteke, there's a feud then. There's something happens. Milivojevic, I think, has been the bigger man. He stepped back and said, I tell you what then, right, go on then, go and score your goal.
Not for me.
I think that's the only way he can do it, Joe. I honestly think that's the only way that he can do it there, because that then comes across in the dressing room and that then goes to the bus when they're going to the next game away. There's a little bit of needle there before someone can put it to bed. I just think it's a total act of selfishness by Benteke, and Milivojevic was the bigger and better man for doing what he did.
I agree on the selfishness of Benteke, but I think Luka.
Yeah, I take your point you're doing, but honestly, Joe, I tell you, you've been in dressing rooms yourself, and you know the way that dressing rooms can, something so small can manifest into something so big, and that's what I think would have. I think that's what would have happened.
But Benteke was so clearly in the wrong. I think the whole dressing room would have been on Luka's side, even if he had cause to sing.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I'm with you from that. What you're saying, but
Roy Hodgson was obviously not happy either.
The reality is different, and Hodgson quite rightly, yeah.
All right, so you applaud the bigger man argument. Yeah. I don't know. I thought. Sometimes it's never ideal, but sometimes in life you just kind of have to say no.
Yeah, but that argument then could happen in the dressing room. It's not really.
You missed the penalty.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, it's cost you 3 points. I spoke about before, but Milivojevic then stamps his authority in the dressing room and says, "Look."
But do you hope he's done that at least?
I would like to think so. Yeah,
and I dare say, think so. The Crystal Palace dressing room would have jumped in right behind
him. Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Yeah. Yeah.
So something's kicked off here. Good God, Joe. I mean, we're not getting into this. How can you not mention Federer as up there with the best of all time? Maria shocked and done.
Well, you've just come out with something quickly, haven't you? We can put
Well, no, the reason is, Maria, because we were talking about Ronnie O'Sullivan and then we started the football show. And so I picked the most naturally gifted footballer I could think of as a comparison. If we had started the tennis show, I promise I would have mentioned Federer. Seriously, Joe, have you forgot Ali?
There'll be a few of those now, won't there?
Look, Dele Alli's a very good player, I suppose.
Yeah, not bad.
If you're looking for a naturally gifted player, look no further than Bod, says Kieran O'Malley. Yeah, look, we're not doing this. It was just simply a messy comparison, seeing as we're on the football show. So that's the Benteke situation. I mean, it's just so, yuck. You know, it really is pathetic stuff. And he hasn't been in good form. And it was such a horrible penalty.
Yeah, he's taken penalties like that before, hasn't he? And you
there's nothing worse than the slow, stuttery run up and then soft down the middle.
Yeah.
And a miss.
Yeah.
At least whack it.
I know. Put it with pace into the corners. Keep. If you don't hit it quite right, at least then you're going with a bit more conviction. It was poor, yeah. Very poor. And that's the thing. I mean, see it towards the end of the season, and particularly when you get into those finer, the last few games, last maybe 5, 6, 10 games, whatever it would be, when you're under a little bit of pressure, and what that 2 points could have done to them. So we'll see if they do regret that further down the line.
We'll leave it a few weeks and then we'll have Stephen Reid on, who's obviously working as an assistant to Roy Hodgson, back on the show, and when he least expects it,
hopefully they're safe at that stage
and has forgotten about it, we can ask him what happened in the dressing room afterwards and what did he make of it. Still nil all between Burnley and Stoke. after 88 minutes. Crystal Palace 0, Watford 1. That's been the case most of the season after 69 minutes. And Huddersfield 0, Chelsea 3. So,
well, do you know what? Just to say that Chelsea. Palace obviously getting beat tonight as well. That, I'm sure now, manifested into the start of that game tonight. That little negativity that happens, because it happened so late. Mm-hmm. The crowd are going away with a negative feel. They come back to Selhurst Park for the next game.
Yeah.
And it's flat. It's flat. I mean, I've not been watching the game, but just seeing a few of the reports, it does seem quite flat in the game. Yeah. The goal they conceded was poor. Burnley have just taken the lead there, actually, in the 89th minute. 1-0 Burnley, yeah.
Okay. Benteke is starting this evening. So is Luka in midfield alongside Kabay and Wilfred Zaha. Still can't pronounce his name very well.
Milivojevic, yeah.
I mean,
it's when you're in the commentaries alongside Dave McIntyre and he's like, he's drumming it in.
Yeah, I'm sure. We're taking a short ad break. We will give some thoughts on the Champions League draw. Certainly Juve, Spurs, obviously Barcelona against Chelsea and Real Madrid, PSG jump out. We'll talk about that. But also Tim Vickery will join us. It's 10 years since Kaká won the Ballon d'Or and unfortunately didn't do a whole lot after that.
Off the Ball.
In association with AIR. Watch 35 live European Rugby Champions Cup games this season on the AIR Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
This is Kaká. He's got Sorbis to his left. Kaká, what a run! Kaká, what a run! What a goal! He went all the way. He didn't need anyone. 3-0 to Brazil.
Kaká accelerating away from Eze and equalising. Wonderful individual goal by Kaká. They just couldn't live with his pace. And having freed himself from the attentions of Gabriel Eze, Kaká, cool as you like, slotted it past Edwin van der Sar. And in the blink of an eye, Manchester United's lead is gone. Here's Kaká. He's seen off Fletcher. He's seen off Eze. He's still going. It's wonderful from Kaká. Absolutely magical. He played them on his own then, and he beat them all. And Kaká has struck twice in his first half. All his own work. Stunning goal.
Yeah, stunning goal by a stunning player, certainly at that period of time. That was in 2007, 10 years ago. Kaká, it was against Manchester United. You'll remember that leg very well. It was at Old Trafford, and maybe he was at the peak of his powers. He scored two that night and was just kind of unstoppable. It was rather glorious. Manchester United fans, I would say, especially remember it. Kaká in the away white of AC Milan that night just could not be stopped and won the Ballon d'Or. And then, well, it just didn't really work out long term for Kaká. So to try and assess just how brilliant he was and his place in Brazilian football, we have, of course, Tim Vickery. Good evening.
Very good evening to you, gentlemen.
Were you watching that evening when he was at Old Trafford and was utterly devastating?
No, I don't remember that one. I do remember, I think the first clip he played was, I was in the stadium, it was a Brazil and Argentina just after the 2006 World Cup at the Emirates. And I remember that third goal when he ran all the way. And Mascherano had just gone off for Argentina, as I remember. And the defensive midfielder was slow. And if you didn't mark him, he could absolutely tear you apart. If you could mark him, I don't think he was the most subtle of players. I think you can tell so much about Kaká from those two Champions League finals against Liverpool. Remember the first one, 2005, in Istanbul. Mm-hmm. Liverpool sent out a team that didn't have anyone to mark him, and Milan were 3-0 up at half time just because Kaká ran rampage. And then at the break, on came Didier Hamann and just sat on him, and that stopped him. And that was the platform that Liverpool had to get themselves back in the game and draw that 3-3 and win on penalties. And then the same sides met a couple of years later. And there, Kaká wasn't particularly effective. It was 1-0 to Milan, but he wasn't having much of an effect while Mascherano was on the pitch. And then Liverpool, 1-0 down towards the end, they have to chase the game. So Mascherano comes off, and then suddenly, with no one there to block him, Kaká runs right and sets up what proved to be the winning goal. So he was a player who, and he was like a freight train moving at pace. But I don't think he was the most subtle of players.
Okay.
And when you think that he's the last player to win the award before Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi, I think there's a huge chasm between the pair of them and Kaká.
There is, to be fair, it does feel that way. It does feel like things went into overdrive, and he was the last of a certain more innocent era in some respects. And that possibly, that maybe, I mean, one-dimensional is clearly too strong a phrase, but if you go with me on it, that one-dimensional aspect of his play perhaps explains why, once the hamstring injuries kicked in and he lost that unbelievable pace, he didn't have much to fall back on in the way of world-class abilities.
I think that's quite fair. And when he went to Real Madrid, there were two chronic injuries. It was a groin one and a knee one as well. And if you took that, you know, that explosion away from him, I agree with you 100%. And it does seem harsh to call him one-dimensional. But I suppose if we're going to compare him with Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, he does seem a little bit one-dimensional. But nevertheless, in his pomp, a magnificent player, especially for Milan. I think he'll be remembered much more for his time with Milan than his time anywhere else, and even with the Brazil national side.
Yeah, but when he moved to Milan, €8.5 million in 2003, and then he replaces Rui Costa. Now, I hold Rui Costa up there, you know, when I've played against Rui Costa. What an unbelievable player he was. So for him to replace him and then get in the side and win the Ballon d'Or, establish himself very, very quickly, he obviously had that real confidence about him at such a young age that defied maybe his age by going over to Europe and to Italy and then getting in the side straight away and then obviously inspiring the team to win the Scudetto in his first season.
It wasn't only Rui Costa, it was Rivaldo as well, who was there at Milan. And he put Rivaldo on the bench, on first for Milan and then for Brazil as well. And the Kaká story, and it's not a typical Brazil footballer story. He's from a very upper middle class background. But he's someone who has used, or in professional terms, I think he used his privileges, not as a kind of hammock to lie on, but as a springboard to get the most out of his potential. He had an accident in a swimming pool when he was around 18 that nearly ended his career. And it was just a little jolt that perhaps a possible, you know, he could have gone other ways. He could have gone into academic life. He could have followed his father as a very successful engineer. But having that accident, he sat down afterwards and he wrote off a plan for himself, something like a 12-point plan. Right, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. And then one by one, he went about those tasks and he crossed them off the list. Being from that upper middle class background, speaking languages and so on, I think that made it much easier for him when he came across to Italy. And he said himself that adapting to Europe was much easier than he had feared. But it had a lot to do with the fact that he really wanted to be there. It wasn't just something he was going to do to get paid more or even to progress as a footballer. It was as a human being he was really looking forward to the experience of living in another culture. So he wasn't scared of it. And I think his background gave him an advantage there.
And what kind of character is he?
He's very, very calm and well spoken, very intelligent. Will be very interesting to see what happens to him now, I think, what he wants to do now. And he's just left Orlando City in the States. He doesn't have a club. There are other clubs in Brazil and so on interested in him. But what he does long term, what's he going to do with his life? And does he want to stay in the game in some capacity? Because if not, then I think that's a shame, because there's a lot of intelligence and a lot of experience there that the game could benefit from.
Yeah.
Well, you touched on at the start, Joel, just to say, how will he be remembered, I suppose, as well? What about him for the national side then? How will he be remembered, considering that he had such a great start to his career in general?
Yeah, a bit of a disappointment. He went to the 2002 World Cup for experience. He came on in one of the group games. But 2006, do you remember? And I never liked them. I never rated them. But they went with that magic four, you know, the magic quartet. They went with Ronaldo and Adriano, Ronaldinho and Kaká, and it never worked. It was unbalanced, and it enforced Kaká to work back defensively, and he wasn't very happy doing it. I don't know if you remember that tournament, but he started off the first game. He scored the winner against Croatia. He was man of the match. But during the course of that tournament, he got worse and worse and worse. The final game, the quarterfinal, when they were eliminated by France, and they hauled him off because he was so ineffective. Then you get 2010, and 2010 could have been his defining moment. And the team there under Dunga was a counter-attacking team that was absolutely built around him. But he was, again, he was a big, big disappointment in that World Cup. Got himself sent off during the group stages. And the defeat against Holland, I think it goes down as a little bit as his defeat. Maybe the injuries were already kicking in there. He would have loved an opportunity to have a last hurrah and perhaps to be the wise old head in the group in 2014. And he just got back in the squad, and there was something interesting there. And then the coach changed. About 18 months before the World Cup, Luis Felipe Scolari came back and obviously didn't fancy him. And that was the end of him. So he didn't get in there. So I think you look at his international career, lots and lots of games and a fair few goals, but a lot of them come in friendlies. And what you're measured by as a long-standing Brazil international is World Cups. And in that one, Kaká is something of a disappointment.
Right. So they don't necessarily see him as a great, who was just even a bit unlucky with injuries even.
Well, I think a great, yes, but to be up in the pantheon, you've got a lot of competition there because you're competing with people who've won the World Cup five times. So he's not going to be there. He'd be behind, I think, Ronaldinho, who the reign of Ronaldinho really at top level was so short. Yeah. It was we got three wonderful years, three incredible years out of him, and not a lot else. But I think those 3 years were so incredible, were so aesthetically pleasing, that Ronaldinho is probably remembered with more affection than Kaká.
Well, I would agree. I mean, Ronaldinho in those 3-4 years was just so incredible. I mean, there was a period where in the midst of that, where you were thinking to yourself, God, if he could keep this going for another 2, 3, 4 years, and maybe even win a World Cup with Brazil, you can actually make a strong enough argument that he's one of the greatest of all time because he was doing such ridiculous things. But as you said, 3 years just isn't enough. But I mean, he was a better player than Kaká. When both of them were at their best, you'd have to say he was a good distance ahead of Kaká.
Ronaldinho was just incomparable. Yeah. The natural talent that he had was just absurd. And I remember that thing you just mentioned there, Joe. And going into the 2006 World Cup, there was a big Brazilian magazine, and on the front cover, it was, "This is the tournament when Ronaldinho is going to prove he's better than Pelé." And that was the expectation.
Yeah.
And that's where it all started going wrong for him, I think. And then after that, after his failure in that World Cup, his off-the-field activities start kicking in. And you just wonder what he really wanted in the end, what he was interested in. I remember when he came back to Brazil, a player who played with him in Europe was asked, how's he going to do? And the answer was, well, it depends if he gets more than 1 hour sleep a night.
I mean, he's still only 35 now. How was it viewed then when he went to Orlando City over there? What is the MLS, I suppose, viewed as? In what sort of light is it viewed over there in Brazil?
Same as everywhere.
Yeah, I suppose it's right. But is it almost just like, because how was he, 30, 31 when he's gone over there? He's still, essentially, what you're thinking, he should be in his prime playing in one of the top clubs around Europe, wouldn't you?
Yeah, he did have a little spell back at São Paulo's original club while he was waiting to go to the MLS, and he didn't really tear up too many trees there. So it was obvious that time had already reduced his effectiveness. I think his career, and it does stand as a kind of, his club career does stand as a kind of before and after, before going to Real Madrid and after going to Real Madrid. Because as we were talking about earlier on, if you just took some of that pace, that acceleration and that physicality away, then he doesn't have the same power of imagination as the truly, truly greats. And so I think it's a career that at the top level petered out a little bit early because of injuries.
Yeah. Incidentally, was there nobody around Ronaldinho at any stage who could talk to him and talk some kind of sense into him? Or was he surrounded by an entourage of yes people?
Well, he's got his brother around him. I know at Barcelona, when he started to go off the rails, they just couldn't get through to him. They tried the stick and they tried the carrot and just nothing worked. And that was Guardiola's big call. When he was promoted to head coach at Barcelona,
sure.
He thought, I've got my capital now, and I'm going to use my capital, and I'm going to get rid of him. And it proved, I think, to be an absolute masterstroke. If you see what happened to the club and what happened to the player afterwards, that was a totally correct decision.
It's such a pity that there wasn't some kind of hurt professional self-respect within Ronaldinho.
Yep.
That he didn't, he was still young enough and more than good enough to kick on and have another few amazing years post Barcelona. But it was almost like he accepted his fate.
Yeah, I end up feeling confused about him because you don't know whether to be grateful for those three fantastic years he gave us or just to be angry that he could have been so much more.
Yeah.
I've always felt with him that the death of his father, his brother was a child prodigy, and as a result of that, they moved from a poor neighborhood to a wealthy neighborhood with a swimming pool, and his father drowned in that swimming pool. And I've always felt that that perhaps has it certainly had an effect on Ronald Gio, and maybe it put inside his head the idea that life is finite. You know, enjoy yourself. It's later than you think, because you know he could have just concentrated on his football and then waited till around now, mid to late 30s, and then enjoyed himself. And then what a career he'd have to look back on. But
yeah,
I think there was always that thing of time is going on drink today and tomorrow you may die, but you rarely do.
What age would he have been, give or take, when his father died?
He was just a kid. He was something like 8, 9, something like that.
Okay. No, he was just quite unbelievable for a couple of years there. I mean, maybe it says something about Kaká that we spent more time talking about Ronaldinho. Maybe that kind of puts it into light. This is not a plant, by the way, I'm strictly being told. But John from Limerick says, "Hi, Joe, can you ask Tim if he's written a book about his experiences in South America? And if not, will he please put pen to paper?"
Not yet. I think I might wait until I've got something to say. No, not yet, no.
Well, I want...
Maybe it's a project for...
There's more than enough to say, YouTube. Yeah.
I want the audio version read by you.
Yeah.
To be honest.
I've sent better people than you to sleep. Don't you worry, man.
Thanks a million as ever. Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers.
Tim Vickery on the line there. That's made me...
I know.
Sad for Ronaldinho.
Honestly, never heard that about his father.
I do remember being in college at the time when Ronaldinho was having his three great years.
And yeah.
YouTube was a very new thing, believe it or not, and watching him a lot, and the look one way and pass the other way.
No look pass. Yeah.
Was endlessly funny. And yeah. Just my God.
The goal I remember was the overhead kick. Do you remember when he brought it down on his chest? Was that against Real Madrid? Might not be against somebody. Ball coming over his shoulder, and he chests it, but the ball goes behind him, and he's got to adjust so quickly, and it's the over a kick, then straight back over his shoulder. Unbelievable goal. Yeah. Remember the toe poke against Chelsea in the Champions League when he just come from nowhere, the ball's a bit under his feet.
Yeah.
How do I get a shot? And he just like toe pokes.
There's this like samba swivel of the hips before that toe poke. Like it's shimmy,
yeah.
Dink. And of course, I mean, he has assists with his back. You know, the ball come to him, he put his back to it, or the shoulder pass. Oh.
He'd be right up there. He's a Joe Malloy player.
Honestly, I was making the argument pre-06 in the college SU bar. If he wins the World Cup here, you can argue he's the greatest of all time. It was that, that unbelievable. That was before Messi, obviously.
Pure natural, isn't it? Pure natural.
That was before Messi. So what I've learned from tonight, lads, is Ronnie O'Sullivan's the greatest, no question, and Kaká was a half-decent pub team player, so it's great. Kaká came out of that quite badly, actually. Unfairly badly.
But I think it is, and... And do you know what? To an extent,
can you save this thought until after ads?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, sorry, no, that's very rude of me, but I have to get to ads. Burnley 1-0 is a full time. Crystal Palace 2-1. Crystal Palace 2-1. Kev,
have they?
Sacco 88th minute. James McArthur 90th minute.
Oh,
Watford are 2-1 down. Crystal Palace 1-0 down. They've been 1-0 down since the third minute. Sacco in the first minute, and James McArthur. In the 88th minute, Sacco, and James McArthur in the 90th minute.
Unbelievable.
So they're 2-1 up Crystal Palace. That is unbelievable. Full time, Huddersfield 1, Chelsea 3. Back in a second.
Off the ball.
In association with Air. Watch 42 live Premier League games this season on the Air Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
Welcome back. You want to tell people what happened?
No, we don't need to discuss anything, Joe. We can't promote anything like that, so no.
So the full times are in. They've all gone full time now, basically. Oh, well, actually, they're still playing at Selhurst Park, where Crystal Palace have come back from the dead to lead Watford by 2-1. Yeah. Burnley are fourth in the Premier League. In the Premier League, Burnley, after beating Stoke by 1-0. And Chelsea beat Huddersfield 3-1. A nothing goal from Huddersfield there at the end. Which didn't change the result ultimately.
No, ultimately not. Chelsea
didn't change your night at all.
Chelsea were cruising. So
tomorrow OTB AM is live 7:45 YouTube, Facebook, and all of Off the Ball's digital channels. It is a Tommy Walsh special. He's going to be there. It can't not be brilliant. Tom Dunne will be on the way very shortly. Tim in Limerick says, "I'll never forget Eamon Dunphy." I can't. This comes with a health warning. I don't know if Eamon said this. To be fair, I don't have time to fully check. But speaking after AC Milan defeated United in 07 Champions League semi-final, where he said, "Reality is Kaká, hype is Ronaldo." It's a good line. It's a good line. It's fair to say Ronaldo won the war there.
Oh, yeah, I'd say so. I'd say so.
So we're pretty much done. We're back tomorrow. Or in fact, we're not. Well, I am.
No, I'll see you. I'll be back in Thursday.
The Phillips Sports Manager of the Year Awards are on tomorrow, which means that Kevin Kilbane, Nathan Murphy, Dave McIntyre, Jerry Gilroy, Adrian Barry, and everybody else in the Off the Ball Sports Department is on the lash. I mean, sorry, at the event in the Shelburne.
Yeah, I'm going to a reputable event.
Yeah, Joe. No, I'm sorry.
You know, I'm really looking forward to it.
Unable to make it into work tomorrow. So I'll be here, and who knows what we'll have on the show. Oh, in fact, Lee Dixon's on the show tomorrow.
Yeah, there you go.
Lee Dixon talking about...
And Andy Lee.
89, the new Arsenal documentary, 1989.
Yeah.
I didn't realise in... Are we out of time? We're done? In 89, I knew, obviously, Anfield and had to win by two and all that. I didn't realise Arsenal were 16-1 at the start of that season and Liverpool were evens. They were so dominant. Arsenal hadn't won the league in 18 years. Their best finish had been third in 1981, but they were a nothing team.
Yeah.
And little old George Graham walks in with his double winners' medals from 71 and takes charge and whoom. So Lee Dixon was like an 18, 19-year-old that year. So he's going to be on the show tomorrow. That'll be good. And Katie Taylor fights tomorrow and Billy Walsh will be on. Andy Lee will be in studio. In fact, the more I think about it...
There you go.
It's going to be a cracking evening tomorrow. Yeah. You do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Okay, and Eddie O'Sullivan on Wednesday night rugby as well. So we've got lots to talk about tomorrow. It's suddenly turned into an absolutely fine evening. Just a reminder, Wednesday night rugby tomorrow will give you a chance to join us in the Leia Healthcare box at the Aviva. We will have a full build-up to Leinster Exeter on Saturday and a Legends panel from just after one. So for chances to win, check out the Off the Ball social channels. And it's all with thanks to Leia Healthcare, the official health and wellness partner of Leinster Rugby, who are celebrating their It's Good to Live campaign. Tom Dunn is on the way next, and we'll see you tomorrow. Good luck.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.